ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you live from Stephanie's underground bunker in New York City. I am John Fugelsang, filling in all this week for Stephanie E. Los Mooks. We miss them, they miss you, you're stuck with me, they'll be back next week, and we've been having a lot of fun without them. We've got a fantastic show today. It's been a riot of a show all week. I'm joined, as always, by Tony in the Burbank office. How are you there, Tony?
I'm doing good, sir.
Good, good. Now, I got a lot more complaints yesterday about you dominating the conversation. And I need you to know, Tony, the show's not really about you, okay?
I'll keep that in mind, sir.
I know you like to, you know, really interject a lot, but really, I need you to tone it down to 7 today, if you would.
I will.
Good. That's banter on the show. There's so much to talk about. We've had a great run so far this week. We had Judy Gold, Hal Sparks, Rick Overton, and today is not going to let down the intensity of coolness. From citizenradio.org, Jamie Kilstein and Allison Kilkenny, two of the funniest and smartest people I know in the progressive blogging and comedy world. Jamie is a hilarious comic, and Allison is a mainstay on Huffington Post. We've got Pulitzer Prize winner Joel Brinkley joining us today. He wrote a devastating piece in last week's San Francisco Chronicle about the culture of Bahabaz in Afghanistan, which is a culture centuries old of men taking young boys as lovers. We've heard none of this in the media, but the troops have apparently been shocked by it, and there's a conventional wisdom going back for many centuries. Not all Afghani men, but many, many Afghani men consider women to be something for children, to procreate, and boys to be something for pleasure. I was able to track down Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Joel Brinkley. He'll be joining us in the next hour to talk about this article and this devastating reality and what our troops are really fighting for over there. Wayne Fetterman's one of my favorite comedians, and he's on the conservative side. I promised that I would have a couple of I would try to book a couple of conservative guests this week to try to mix it up a bit and give you guys a reason to get fired up. So he'll be joining us. Counterpunch's Mike Whitney is going to be joining us via phone to talk about the rights strategy against Obama for the midterm elections. Blogger and writer R.J. Eskow, who you might also know from the Young Turks, is joining us to talk about Social Security. And Gotta Laugh is joining us as well, who's a very funny blogger and a Twitter mainstay, and I'm sure that you're going to enjoy her a lot. So we're jam-packed with people, and there's so much to talk about, friends. I want you to call us all morning long at 1-800-STEPH-12. We're going to be talking about the Dove Center and the Koran burning. Are you excited for the big Koran burning, Tony?
Yes.
I can tell. I'm excited, but I couldn't find an actual Koran, so what I'm going to do is I downloaded one on my iPhone, the Audible Koran on tape, and I'm going to go there and just hit delete when they start burning them. So that's going to be my way of joining the protesters. I heard their website was taken down, by the way, the Dove Outreach Center. I've been communicating with them all week, trying to talk them into coming on the show, and now I just heard that the web host has shut down their website because it's now considered a hate site for what they're doing. So that's pretty amusing. And, of course, President Obama has waded into the fray, calling the Koran burning a destructive act and pretty much saying it's a recruiting video for al-Qaeda, and it's helping al-Qaeda, and it's making them very pleased. We finally, Tony, you'll be excited about this, had our first Republican, our first major Republican of note, weigh in on the Koran burning yesterday. That would be America's sweetheart, Sarah Palin, who came out and said it was counterproductive. God bless Sarah for doing that. However, she did take the time to say it's every bit as bad as building a mosque near Ground Zero. Now, I like Sarah Palin, folks. I really do. To me, she's like a female Ann Coulter. But it's not the same as building a mosque near Ground Zero. Number one, as we've talked about, it's not at Ground Zero, and it's not a mosque. It's in the old Burlington Coat Factory, so you can only be outraged if you're very protective of American coats and jackets that were really made in China. And it's also not a mosque. It's a community center. We know this. And again, the community center is not devoted to hating other religions. It's devoted to religious tolerance and understanding and interfaith awareness. Burning Korans is devoted to one thing, hate. So Sarah Palin wins points and she loses points at the same time. However, I'll give her big points because, as we know, she's the only major Republican figure to have the guts to take a stand on this. We've heard nothing from Bush. We've heard nothing from McCain. They've been as silent now as they were when the Abu Ghraib pictures came out. And isn't that adorable? But we're going to still talk about that and about how now the current meme from General Petraeus is that by burning these Korans, you are putting our troops' lives at risk in the Middle East. You know what else puts our troops' lives at risk in the Middle East? Sending them to the Middle East. That puts their lives at risk. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Do you really feel comfortable with our troops dying for the government of Hamid Karzai, especially after you hear our guest, Joel Brinkley, talking about the culture of Afghanistan? We're also going to cover Wyclef and Sean Penn and their beef, because we haven't got to that all week. John Boehner and all of his new ideas, which should take 5 seconds. And Barbara Boxer's aide busted for weed, which I find hilarious. Have you followed this whole story there, Tony?
No, but that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. You know, at first I thought, oh, what are they doing? They're persecuting someone for cannabis. You know, I mean, I don't think marijuana should be legal. I think it should be, in some cases, forcibly administered by the state, and especially in Congress. I think every senator and congressman should be forced to have a blunt, and so they'll realize, hey, man, I love you. We're all on the same side, and death is an illusion, as Bill Hicks might have said. However, a senior aide for Senator Barbara Boxer was arrested Tuesday morning, not just for possession of cannabis, but for attempting to bring marijuana into the Hart Senate office building. Now, here's the thing. I'm not one of these anti-pot guys. You know, remember all the propaganda they told us when we were kids, Tony? Remember they would tell us all the terrible things pot does to your brain?
Oh, I have Reefer Madness on tape.
I can't recall it right now. I mean, they said some stuff. It's a haze to me. But here's the thing. Whether cannabis should be legal or not, if you're a senior aide for a senator in the political fight of her life, trying to retain her Senate seat, and it's election season 2 months away, and you're happening to be going to the Hart Senate office building, don't bring pot with you. It's not legal. And if Carly Fiorina winds up getting elected and outsourcing all your jobs in California over to Bangladesh, as she's done so effortlessly with HP, you might have this guy to thank. Marcus Stanley, who served as senior economic advisor and at one time worked on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee chaired by Boxer, was stopped by a police officer Tuesday morning when he allegedly tried to remove and conceal a leafy green substance from his pocket during a security screening at the Constitution Avenue door of the Hart Building around noon, according to Politico. I want to know your thoughts on this, and especially from Barbara Boxer supporters. Obviously, this is no reflection on the senator, but we know her foes will use it against her. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about BP playing the blame game. Now they're trying to say that it's Halliburton's fault. Of course, Halliburton were the ones who wanted 20 centralizers for that well, and BP wanted only 6 because that saved them a lot of time and 10 full hours. In this case, Halliburton is the good guys. Alabama is going to execute a man today who has an IQ below 70. Fidel Castro says that he was way too hard on gays when he first took over control of Cuba. He has said to Ahmadinejad, hey, Mahmoud, leave those Jews alone. And yesterday he said that the Cuban economic model has failed. Fidel's really making the rounds this week, and I want to know what y'all think of him. And finally, Snooki of the Jersey Shore was fined $500 for being a nuisance and annoying people. If they could fine her $500 for annoying people, they should be able to fine MTV $500 million for dancing on Rock's grave. So all that and much more coming up on the show. I'm very excited about our guest today. I'm so excited, and it's getting increasingly difficult to hide it. Are you with me, Tony?
Woo!
I can tell. I appreciate your feigned enthusiasm. We got a hell of a show, kids. The number is 1-800-STEPH-12. We're taking no prisoners. We're celebrating America. We're beating the right wing into their corner and wiping the tan off John Boehner's face. I'm John Fugelsang. I'm proud to be with you this morning, and we'll be right back after this.
That was strangely arousing.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
I get delirious. Never you need. Lose all self-control.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steffi and the Mooks all week long. We are delighted to take your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. Barack Obama has just voiced support for White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel for Chicago mayor in an interview with Stephanopoulos, which is pretty funny considering Rahm hasn't even announced he is running for the job yet. So here's your hat. What's your hurry? I think we know where it all stands on that. And we have got quite a show coming up today. Jamie Kilstein, Allison Kilkenny, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Joel Brinkley, and many, many more. I want to go to a call. Joshua in New York City, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Hey, I was calling in regards to the statement that was made by Imam yesterday. And it was fairly troubling to me, being a progressive moderate. I'm also a Christian, and I've thought about this for a while, but he made a statement last night that we were going to fear, or that he fears, the repercussion of the extremist Muslim community if he were to move the mosque from that location.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he moves it or not is of no concern, really. However, the statement that he made is what I am concerned with. And in a country that was founded on Christianity, I kind of worry that we're not actually united enough not to have to fear these repercussions. And, you know, I also asked the question to him, why is it that we fear them when they decline the building of our temples all the time, Christian churches and things like that in different countries? And they don't fear a repercussion. There is no, there's no thought process behind it. However, they keep saying that, you know, and don't get me wrong, I was also in the military. I spent years in Iraq. I spent years in Bosnia and the former Yugoslavia. So I'm very familiar with their faith. And I had quite a few friends. In fact, I dated a Muslim while I was there. Well, she wasn't living there. She converted while we were dating. But her views actually changed as soon as she converted. I was actually in Iraq. She called me and threatened or accused me of killing her brothers and sisters.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was a network engineer. I wasn't killing anybody.
Right.
So, you know, but it's not a, it, to me, it just wasn't a faith that actually allowed other faiths to exist.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question, Joshua. You would, since you've been there, and you know that here in America we have our far right wing fundamentalist religious crazies, right? But their far right wing fundamentalist religious crazies are way crazier than ours. Would you agree?
I would. However, the problem is what we consider far right wing would be what their middle is.
Exactly. I mean, you know, our conservatives are very liberal compared to their conservatives. You're talking about the Imam Rauf's interview on Larry King last night, right?
Yes, I am.
Well, I have to agree with you. I don't know if he intended it to come out as a threat, but when he said if we're forced to move the center, that would be very bad and could cause repercussions in the Islamic world, that sounds vaguely threatening. It's true, although he could just be stating an open fact that, you know, look, we're trying to get a toehold for the non-crazies in the society, and if you push us around, it's going to embolden the crazies. That could be a threat, but it's also factually accurate because, as we know, there's a lot of guys in the Middle East looking for any excuse to hate the great Satan even more, right?
Oh, you're exactly correct. However, we have noticed, though, in the recent past, well, not even recent, it's been going back for a while, that each time we do something here in the States, and this is kind of where they gain ground, we don't enforce any religious freedoms here of the Christians who actually were here first. And, it deteriorates on a daily basis. We remove, and don't get me wrong, I agree with the separation of church and state. However, you know, they take prayer out of schools, the public prayer, things like that they remove. However, we give way to other religions to practice more freely, and so that we don't impede their faith, so to speak.
Right.
We diminish the rights of the Christian.
I don't think you're right about that. I don't think we've diminished anybody's rights as Christians here. I don't think that Muslims or Jews have been given elevated rights over Christians.
What?
I think that, you know, in the public sphere, that's just a no-no. And I disagree with you that we were founded as a Christian nation.
I'll give you one example. When I was in high school, they removed our prayer group. I wasn't a part of it then, so it really didn't matter to me then.
Mm-hmm.
But they removed it. However, today, not only is the prayer group not there, they actually do have a Muslim group that's able to meet on the school premises. So, and that's come about in the recent, I believe, in the past.
Is the Muslim group a prayer group or more of a cultural club?
They pray. It's so that they can pray there five times a day.
Well, then someone's got a right to a lawsuit because that's un-American.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just what I said. But it's happening in a lot of places.
Sure,
it just
but you know, it's
that it happened at my old high school.
Right on, but it's a case-by-case basis, and I wouldn't say it's a right of it's a case of rights being taken away from Christians, because, you know, whether we like it or not, if it's public money, if it's a public building, we can't have anything endorsing one religion over another. And, you know, the Article of Tripoli in 1789, signed by John Adams, but Article 11, which was the Treaty of Tripoli, rather, Article 11, which was ratified by George Washington, we said this 2 days ago, stated, the government of the United States is in no way founded on the Christian religion. I know the pilgrims came here. I know the Puritans founded this place, and we were founded by Christians so uptight they were kicked out of England. But the fact is that, you know, we're not allowed to have one religion established over another. And, you know, I've been, whether you're pro the mosque or not, most Americans now, in a poll released yesterday, are opposed to allowing the Cordova House to be there. But whether you're opposed to it or not, we can't disagree that they have a right to be there as Americans.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not disagreeing that they have a right by any means. My statement was purely factual in the fact that we have diminished those things which were of Christian faith, mm-hmm. and we're pushing for. I mean, you don't hear about, you know, when a Christian church or anything like that has been declined to be built in a different country, and most of the time it's not by the community that does it; it's by the government.
But I mean, we do hear this quite a lot. This is a big argument of Newt Gingrich saying that, you know, we'll allow a mosque here when they allow churches in Saudi Arabia. Now, this is disingenuous for many reasons. They are a theocracy. Well, actually, they're really a dictatorship, but, you know, they're a religious-based government, which is what Iraq may become if we're not too careful. You know, majority rule in Iraq may lead to Sharia law. But they are allowed to, you know, ban all the churches they want over there because they don't have the freedom we like to brag about. It's not
right.
You know, they're comparing apples and oranges. I mean, we're better than them, right?
Really,
that's
not
why we're not.
You're right. But you're saying that we're better. However, and I'll give you one other thing, just food for thought, because this was actually a study that was done by a group of students here at the college. They actually went around to each of the religious groups. They talked to them a little bit. And what they had come out with, there's a big fear. I'm sorry, and that was not just the religious groups. That was a poll that was taken here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big fears is that, you know, nobody opposes a mosque in general. However, I'm saying that the people they were speaking with, and I apologize.
Sure.
It's the association that they've had with the extremists, each of these, and the unknowing, the fear of the unknown. Rather, they don't know if this particular mosque is going to be associated, because all the other ones also said, well, we're moderate. We're not affiliated with these groups, but there were quite a few that have been tainted by their affiliation with an extremist group by recruitment in the background under straps. And so, you know, a lot of Americans are saying, I don't really know about this, just because, you know, this is what happened with a bunch of these, a whole lot of these.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying all of them, but quite a few. And that's kind of where a lot of that fear is coming, because you don't know which one is going to be. You don't know. You had a military personnel that comes out firing on people, and he's supposed to be this really good guy. He didn't have a bad record, really, but all of a sudden, you know, he's crazy.
Right.
Oh, he just went crazy.
Right on.
And that's kind of the fear that they have, and I understand both sides, because, like I said, I'm not opposed to the mosque. It's just not my nature. I don't really care if you build it or not.
Josh, I got to go. I'm afraid we're out of time. We're out of time, but
okay.
I appreciate your call and the points you made, and I appreciate the longest sentence in the history of radio. Thank you so much. We'll be taking your calls all morning at 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph A. Los Mooks. Don't go away.
I want more
Stephanie Miller.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie. I don't look like her, but I am, in fact, wearing her clothes the entire broadcast. coming to you live from the studios in New York City, where Stephanie used to broadcast from. Now she's back in L.A., but there's still plenty of empty $3 bottles of Andre here to remind me of her. We are taking your calls all morning at 1-800-STEPH-1-2, and let's go to Gretchen in Chicago. The family Von Trapp.
Hello.
Hi, Gretchen. Are you there?
I just got a dial tone. That was weird.
That's okay. That's what I always hear when I call Mom. What's up?
Oh, I wish. First of all, let me just say I'm really glad to hear you this morning, because yesterday the station preempted you for a whole 3 hours of what's going to happen now that
the
Daly's going to go away.
I know. I got so many angry letters from Chicago from people who just, you know, Mayor Daly announces he's retiring and going on vacation, and that was that preempted our all. We had a good show too. You missed some hot stuff.
No, and I literally called the station and said you really need to know your face better, your listeners better, because Stephanie Miller people don't want to hear about Mayor Daly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyway, the one thing that I did want to say is to challenge your last caller on the, you know, Christians aren't getting their full due in society by challenging him to find a hospital that is not Christian.
Right.
Because all of them are. And I think what's interesting,
many of them are, yeah.
I've not found, okay, there's maybe one in the entire city of Chicago. I've looked.
Right.
Okay, so there's that. And what I think is interesting is that in this entire healthcare debate, no one's mentioned the fact that these hospitals that are Christian-based are building enormous new buildings out of what money, I don't know, because apparently, you know, nobody's getting paid, and, oh, the hospitals, you know, blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
But they're building these gigantic new buildings, and they're supposed to be Christian-based, and they routinely sue people, take them to court for hospital bills.
Right.
That are astronomical. People who can't afford to pay it and garnish their wages. I mean, people who work at Walmart, they're garnishing their wages over a hospital bill.
Well, we can hope that the new healthcare reform we've seen enacted earlier this year will help with some of that, but you're right. And are you saying, though, that it's a Christian scam that people are being ripped off?
No, I'm just saying that these people are supposed to be Christians.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're supposed to be living the Christian faith, which is, you know, basically...
Now, you're exactly right, Gretchen. If we were a Christian, country, we'd be giving away health care like Jesus did, and the guy never asked a leper for a copay. Hey, let me ask you, are you excited for Mayor Rahm?
I'm sorry, am I excited for what?
Are you excited for Rahm Emanuel to run for mayor now that Daly's leaving?
I'm excited for him to leave the White House. I don't think he'll get elected. I really don't think he can get elected, but I'd love for him to run, because then he can quit.
That's you and every other Democrat I know, Gretchen. Thank you so much for the call. I want to go to Jeannie in Ithaca.
There, John.
Good morning.
I just wanted to point out that the imam is a Sufi imam from that side of the religion, and that they are of the same ilk as Rumi, the great poet, and Hafiz, and that in the country of Iran, they are just about illegal because they're considered blasphemous because their worldview is so liberal and broad, and that it's a beautiful.
Wait, you're saying that in the Middle East, the hardcore right wing fundamentalist conservative religious people hate the liberal reformers? Is that what you're saying about that society?
That's what I am saying. And
wow, what would that be like here?
Anyway, I wanted the listeners to realize that.
That's fantastic. Tell everyone he is a Sufi, and I thank you for the call. Nora in Minneapolis, are you there?
Hello, John.
Good morning.
Stephanie's got such lovely taste in her host substitutes. I'm happy.
You have no idea.
Before I say my subject about Boxer and the Prop 19, can I just say quickly that because the Muslim religion requires them to pray five times between sunrise and sunset, and the Christian religion requires them to pay whatever they do on Sunday when they're not at work and school, it's a totally different category of why they're allowed during school and work to go pray.
Well, that's a very good point.
But what I called in about is, okay, I'm so tired of being a felon after 43 years of being a felon and fighting against it on these stupid marijuana laws.
Oh, you're talking about that evil, evil, untaxable plant that God grows naturally around the world?
Almost everybody I know wants to move to California after they legalize it. So, but anyway, they got the Prop 19 in place for this fall's election, and mm-hmm. maybe Barbara Boxer will just stay in office on the coattails of the Prop 19 election.
Well, she'd have to embrace it a bit more, and I thank you for the call, but you're really right. You know, they estimate that that's going to bring over $100 million into the economy, and it certainly will, and reduce the crime rate, in my opinion, because, you know, when I was a kid, they always said pot made you violent and lazy. Making violent people lazy is my entire crime prevention program. I'm going to kill you, bro, right after this burrito. Charles in St. Paul, are you there?
Hi, yeah, I'm here, and I take it you're not wearing any underwear if you're dressed like Steph today.
Exactly right.
But we don't want to know about
that.
Well,
it's on my head because I want to be authentic.
I want to compliment you, too, by the way, on how I like the way you draw out the right-wingers. You and Hal are really good about giving them the rope they need to... twist in the wind.
If we hate them, we're no better than them. And I know everyone listening to this show, every liberal I know has right-wing relatives or loved ones or neighbors or coworkers. And you know, if you're a liberal, it's sort of like being a Christian. You're de facto not allowed to hate. You're sentenced to a big tent, and you got to just try to use their own logic against them. Thank you for the kind words.
Not to take it too far, but I think Steph and the Mooks go for the joke a little bit too often, and I like the way you guys do it. But that aside, I was just kind of wondering about something. I'm a born-again agnostic, and I wondered how much money will be taken from the tax base in New York if the mosque that's not a mosque is built at not ground zero. I know it's a closed Burlington coat factory now, but somebody owns that building, and they're paying taxes on it. And it just kind of gripes me whenever I see a new church pop up, and I go, well, there's more off the tax base here. You know, on the whole, I see a place for faith. I've managed to go beyond it. I'm a big supporter of Freedom From Religion Foundation and that works out of Madison. And it'd be great if you got one of those people on sometime to talk about all of this, too. But I frankly see it mostly as a place, you know, that people go when they can't deal with reality. And I don't mean that as a big put-down as it sounds. Because
maybe religion is a place where people go to help them deal with reality. You know,
But then what you're doing is you're going to a place where there's no logic involved necessarily. And I really respect you. I really respect people who are sincere in their faith. And I enjoy talking to them a lot. I was on path to become a Methodist minister at one point in my life, until I had a great conversion to reason. Anytime I bring this up to people who I respect like you, I feel like I'm going to be charged with attacking.
Oh, absolutely
not.
And
I know you don't think that. I know a lot of other people would. But I just don't see why we have to tell ourselves fairy tales.
Right.
And I also understand the need. Like, I've got a friend that's a Methodist minister in Western Nebraska. He is needed. He is performing a service there. He is helping people. But he's doing it, you know, in a way that, it's like Biff Rose said, going to Catholic school taught me everything I need to know to live here in the 12th century.
I hear what you're saying, and I do thank you for the call, but I have to say that, you know, I love my atheist, my agnostic friends, and, you know, my views on religion have been well established on this show. I view Christ like I view Elvis, love the guy, the fan clubs scare me. I am here because of religion, because my mom's an ex-nun and my father was a Franciscan brother. And, you know, for everything you tell me that religion has done that's been harmful and destructive, I can point to something else that religion has done that has uplifted communities, helped us civilize a society, brought people closer together, given comfort to grieving people, given aid and nourishment to the poor. And having recently been through a very long and very sad and painful home hospice experience from my father, it sort of reopened my heart to the positive aspects of organized religion. Because, and I don't mean men in dresses with funny hats telling you, you know, to go scream at women outside clinics. I mean the individual faith. I'm a big fan of personal religion, doing what works for you as long as it harms no one else and makes you feel closer to the God you believe in, or makes you feel closer to yourself or the universe or the goddess or whatever you choose to believe. I don't elevate religion above agnosticism one bit. I just think that we need to try to spread the sanity around, and I love atheists, and I believe in them. Tim from Milwaukee, are you there?
I don't want to change subjects too much on you, but yesterday you had a call, or I think it was a guest, who was saying, how do we combat, you know, right-wingers talking about the free market as if it's the all-knowing being? And
I think that was me, yeah.
Well, I'd like to see bumper stickers out there that compete with the freedom isn't free. And instead it would be the free market isn't free. People have to stop talking about the free market as if it costs nothing to us. The roads, the infrastructure to build it, you know, all the things that Obama's proposing to keep the infrastructure going. That's part of the free market, and our businesses thrive on it. We
Hell
have
yeah.
to pay for that stuff. I'm so tired of people saying, well, I don't know how to combat the free market. We just, you know, the free market isn't free. It's a simple phrase, and more people need to understand that costs money. And you know, the idea that the free market is this all-knowing entity, you know, the invisible hand of the free market?
I like to exactly say, right.
The invisible hand of the free market is just picking our pockets.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, we have to keep saying, you know, they love to say freedom isn't free, and then they say the rich shouldn't go back to paying Clinton-era taxes. It's completely ludicrous and it's illogical. And you're going to be hearing a lot of this, and you make an excellent, excellent point, Tim. You know, when you all have your brainwashed Foxbot coworkers who are saying, you know, Obama's raising taxes. He's cut taxes on 95% of the population. He's cutting taxes on business even more. Krugman's pulling out his beard over it. But, you know, this is not raising taxes. It's letting the Bush-era tax cuts expire. And a lot of folks think that Bush made this with a 10-year expiration date, so the president following him would have to clean up the mess when they finally did expire. But they put an expiration date on those Bush tax cuts because they knew you had to have a time to have a chance to review the whole process. And guess what, folks? We don't need to review it. Clinton raised taxes, and we were fine. These guys saying if you raise the taxes now, if you put them back to Clinton-era tax codes, you're going to lose jobs? Guess what, douchebags? We cut your taxes for 8 years, and what was happening? We were losing 700,000 jobs a month when Obama took office, okay? Every time they tell you that raising taxes on the rich is going to cost jobs, it is a lie. And I want everyone to remember Tim from Milwaukee's point, the free market isn't free. Very brilliant of you. Karen in Los Angeles, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning.
Good morning. You know what? If I hear one more time that we were founded on Christian principles, I'm going to scream. We were founded on one thing and one thing only, money.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not founded by Puritans. We were not founded by pilgrims. We were founded. They came much later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They came much later. There were already colonies established by the Spanish, by the French, you know? There
yeah.
was already colonies here. They were already starting to farm. They were already established. You know, we teach history so poorly in this country, it's not even funny.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, it's bad. And it's because I'm already retaking, I'm in college, retaking history again, women in history, which is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, remembering again, because, you know, it's been many years since I sat, you know, taken history. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. The Puritans came much later.
Yeah.
They were pretty much an afterthought. I mean, we had the Dutch who did a lot more than the Puritans ever did.
Mm-hmm.
The Dutch, we have to thank for trading systems.
I mean, absolutely.
Let me tell you that and Dutch women were a lot more prosperous and did a lot more than Puritan women ever did.
Yeah, and you know, it's true that we weren't raised to be a Christian nation. I want to read you a couple of quotes. The divinity of Jesus is made a convenient cover for absurdity, John Adams.
Mm-hmm.
History, I believe, furnishes no example of a priest-ridden people maintaining a free civil government,
mm-hmm.
Thomas Jefferson. And let's not forget, in Thomas Jefferson's own lifetime, he published a Bible where he took all the miracles out and all the magic stuff out and just published the life, teachings, and works of Jesus Christ back when cut and paste actually meant something. Our founding fathers were deists.
Well,
they weren't belonging to one team, per se.
Here's another thing. Thomas Jefferson was bankrupt by the time he died. The only reason he got to stay in Monticello was out of the goodness of his banker's heart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John Adams, on the other hand, died a very rich man. You want to know why?
Why?
Because Abigail was brilliant. She was what was called a, basically she was the other husband under colonial law at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She was endowed with the rights to be a husband, i.e. manage the farm, be in trade. She had the same rights as a man. And while he was out being a politician, somebody
right.
had to run the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and that's why it's, you know, his story and not her story, because we're not ever taught the story of the women who built this country.
Right.
We're taught the story of the men who made up the laws and divvied up the cash and
the
declared
women,
the wars on the brown people.
The women actually, like I said, Abigail Adams, I mean, there are women covers who were women covered. Women had no rights, but there were women, femme souls.
Right.
Who were basically women with rights.
Right. Well, I thank you for the call. We got to go to break right now, but we'll be back with lots more. It's only going to get funnier, kids. We have some terrific comics coming up and Pulitzer Prize winner Joel Brinkley after the hour. I'm John Fugelsang. This is the Stephanie Miller Show, and we shall be right back. You are the sexiest audience in the history of radio.
Ow. I just snarfed oatmeal out my nose. It must be the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. Oh, we're gonna rock down to
Stephanie Miller.
Avenue, and then we'll take it higher.
Eddie Grant, do you think he still does that song in concert? Do you think he comes out and plays that one, or does he say, nah, I'm gonna rely on my other hits? What do you think? I'm talking to you, Tony. Right on. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. This is John Fugelsang sitting in for Steffers and the Mooks. They are on a very well-deserved location. Stephanie, I have it on good authority, is in a pristine Caribbean resort where she has her boxed wine on an IV drip. And, you know, just when they were about to burn those Korans, they realized they hadn't bought any because nobody knew what a bookstore was. Claire in New Hampshire, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling because I am so revved up again. Yesterday, even actually, it started over the weekend with the speech in Wisconsin, and then yesterday in Ohio, my daughter had written to Obama a few weeks back, telling him that how depressed her mom was because she wasn't fighting back.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday, over the weekend, and yesterday, I saw him, and I just realized it wasn't that he wasn't fighting back.
Right.
He did it on his terms. He wasn't going to do it on their terms. And everything he said, he hasn't gone anywhere. He's just been waiting for the right time, and he has to govern. And so
mm-hmm.
he just decided to punch at the right time, and yesterday was amazing. So yesterday she came home. And before, I had taken all his pictures down and everything, I had of him I took away.
Wow.
And they came home, and there he was up again, and she said, Mom, he's fighting back. And I said, yes.
Well,
and
that's
10 years old. He's 10 years old, and she was like, oh, we are so excited again because he never went anywhere. We just have to be patient and trust this man.
Well, I thank you for the call, Claire, and I want your daughter to write to a few more Democratic politicians I could name because that's a pretty inspiring story. We're going to have Joan Walsh on the show tomorrow to talk about these rather inspiring speeches. Can we play a little clip from yesterday, Tony? I guess not. We'll
clear
have more.
That not all of our policies have been popular. So, no, our job is not easy. But you didn't elect me to do what was easy. You didn't elect me to just read the polls and figure how to keep myself in office. You didn't elect me to avoid big problems. You elected me to do what was right.
Great speech. And before we go, here's a little message from the American Federation of dear. What? They're the American Federation of what? They're the American Federation of State and County Municipal Employees. We know all too well what happens when Republicans run the show. Apologies and favors for big oil and Wall Street, schemes to privatize Social Security, and hundreds of thousands more layoffs for our teachers, nurses, and firefighters. As we get close to November, remember, history only repeats itself if you let it. I'm John Fugelsang. That's your president. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. You're the best audience in radio. The number is 1-800-STEPH-12, and we will be right back with Pulitzer Prize winner Joel Brinkley.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie as she takes a very well-deserved vacation. We're very pleased and thrilled to have you listening, and our number is, as always, 1-800-STEPH-12. We do want to hear from you, but right now, an interview that I'm very, very pleased about with someone I'm thrilled to have. The Defense Department hired military investigator Anna Maria Cardinale to write a report on a phenomena that we're going to discuss in Afghanistan, and her report was called Pashtun Sexuality, which described the culture of the Bakhabaz, which details how for centuries Afghan men have taken boys, roughly 9 to 15, as lovers. And some research suggests that half the Pashtun tribal members in Kandahar are Bakhabaz. There was a shocking article written last week in the San Francisco Chronicle by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and professor Joel Brinkley, and we're very honored to have Professor Brinkley with us on the Stephanie Miller Show. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I can only imagine the kind of response that you've gotten to this piece, but before I get to that, first, am I pronouncing it correctly, Bakhabaz?
That's correct.
Can you explain to our listeners exactly what this culture entails?
When men reach middle age or before that, they tend to sort of seduce little boys. They give them gifts and bring them along until eventually they become their lovers. And the little boys knows what's going on because this has been going on for a very long time, and most of his little friends are doing the same thing. It's the result, many people think, of sort of a perverse interpretation of Islam as applied in Afghanistan. Of course, men cannot see a woman until they're engaged, or speak mm-hmm. to a woman until they're engaged. And as one person, one Afghan, said in this column, I can't see a woman, so how can I fall in love with her? I can see a boy and see that he's beautiful.
Mm. And that there's often a conventional wisdom that women are for procreation and boys are for pleasure?
There's a saying in Afghanistan that says essentially that women are for children, boys are for pleasure.
Mm. Now, you report that when this report came out about Pashtun sexuality, commissioned by the Defense Department, that Western forces were shocked, but Afghans weren't surprised at all. It's apparently just something very common that Americans, for some reason, have not heard about.
When American forces or American journalists or anyone begins work in a completely foreign culture, they're going to find elements of that culture that are completely different from their own. As a journalist, lifelong journalist and foreign correspondent, it's been my belief and that of my colleagues that you cannot take the values of your own country and apply them in a foreign culture. But sometimes you come across something that is so repulsive that you have to step out of that role.
And I admire you for it, and I think that I'm joining millions of Americans who are about to learn about this in saluting you for your bravery and your journalistic integrity for bringing this information to us. I'm wondering, what has been the response of the American armed forces as they become exposed to this culture?
The armed forces in Afghanistan have so many problems to confront that they choose to ignore, for example, the opium poppy cultivation. Mm-hmm. So they commissioned this report just so they could understand what they were encountering. It was not an attempt to change society or otherwise, but to explain this anomaly, these anomalies, their soldiers kept saying. So they have basically, they just turn away when they see this.
Now, I understand that it's most prevalent among the Pashtun. They're the most important tribe in Afghanistan. And isn't President Hamid Karzai Pashtun?
Yes, he is. Very prominent Pashtun.
So he's got a pretty big family. Are there any connections with his people to this culture of Bakhabaz?
I spoke to two Afghan with close connections to the Karzai family, and they told me that they believe one and at least two Karzai family members. There's six Karzai brothers, and then, of course, uncles and cousins and the whole. It's a large family. These people knew of at least two who they believed were Bakhabaz.
No, it's very unpleasant to talk about, but since our tax dollars are going to helping this government and our troops are giving their lives to prop up this government, I think it's really worth talking about how these men come to meet these boys, that there were frequently dance parties put on?
This is pretty common all over the country, primarily in the south where the Pashtun generally live. Young boys dress up as women. They put little bells on their feet. They wear makeup. They dance for these leering old men. The men throw money at them and then argue among themselves about which of them will take the boys home. You can find YouTube videos of this particular practice quite easily. Just put dancing boys in YouTube.
It sounds like something right out of the film L.I.E. Your article talks about how a recent State Department report called the dancing boys a widespread, culturally sanctioned form of male rape. And yet, I have not heard Secretary Clinton or any high-ranking American government officials talking about this. Is that just for the obvious reason they don't want to turn the public tide of opinion against the war even more?
I don't know that Secretary Clinton knows about this. I doubt she has time to read each of these military reports. My column is syndicated in it's about 50 papers. Whether one of them came to her desk, I don't know. But I think you're right. The public has enough problem with this war. If this particular practice became widely known, more than I can accomplish, I think the public would turn even more against the war.
You also detail that since Afghanistan apparently has become the pedophilia capital of Asia, that even many times after marriage, men will still keep their boys?
Absolutely. Sometimes they recruit the boys after they have been married. And the boys, after they have been in this relationship for a while, generally start making plans to do the same thing when they reach maturity. That's why this practice has been going on for centuries.
It's almost very very Roman Empire when you think about it, and that whole culture that that some accuse the Vatican of still carrying on, that boys are born into the society, they are subjugated by these men sexually, and the deal is that as they grow up, they will become the same oppressors that once abused them.
It is not unique to Afghanistan, although I think it is sort of concentrated in Afghanistan in a way that you won't find in many, if any, other countries.
Now, I believe you won your Pulitzer Prize for your reporting from the Middle East?
No, it was from reporting from Southeast Asia, the fall of the Khmer Rouge regime and the resulting refugee Holocaust in 1979.
Okay, pardon me for that. What kind of response have you gotten from this article? And again, this was in the San Francisco Chronicle. Y'all can read it at sfgate.com. What has been your response from your colleagues and from your readers since then?
I've gotten a lot. I always get emails from all over the country on my columns, but I got one that I found pretty interesting. It was from an Afghan man who told me that he did not think Islam was responsible for this because it's a practice that has been underway in Afghanistan since before Islam reached the country, which was, what, the 5th century? I don't know the exact history. I've been writing this column for 3.5 years, and the attention it gets in blogs grows with every passing month. This one hit 670 blogs at last count.
Yes.
And it was in about 30 papers. I think a lot of people know about it now.
The woman who did the report for the Defense Department, Ms. Cardinale, said, "There's no issue more horrifying and more deserving of our attention than this. I'm continually haunted by what I saw, and the boys call the men my lord." My question is, we all know how anti-homosexuality Islam is, so isn't it a bit incongruous that these men would carry on sexual relationships with boys while being spiritually homophobic for religious reasons?
Absolutely, and they've connived rather awkward explanation for it. This does not violate Islam, they say, because we're not really in love with these boys, and it is the love that the Quran forbids. Doesn't convince anyone, but it's useful for them.
So rape of boys is butch and okay. It's the feeling affection for them. It's that old American you're only queer if you're on the bottom mentality, I guess. Now, what do you think would happen if the majority of American citizens and taxpayers found out that our troops are fighting and dying to prop up this Karzai regime and this culture?
I think the White House would have a great deal more trouble than it's having now, and they're having a lot as it is.
Why do you think we're in Afghanistan, sir?
Well, I can tell you why we're still in Afghanistan, and this is common knowledge. In 2001, there was a political imperative to respond to the 9/11 attack, and I think if Al Gore had been president, he would have had felt the same political imperative to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And when Osama bin Laden and his minions were identified as the perpetrators, I don't think the White House, no matter who was sitting in it, would have any choice but to go after him.
Of course.
And that's what we did. The problem, as I think everyone knows by now, is that George Bush grew distracted by Iraq. He invaded Iraq and moved resources out of Afghanistan and allowed the Taliban to stage a resurgence. And by the time everyone realized what had happened, late in the Bush administration and then when Obama came along, it was almost too late. The Taliban had reinserted themselves throughout the society, and Hamid Karzai is almost like the president of Somalia now. He generally rules the city in which he sits and not much else.
It's extremely shocking, and it's very, very disturbing, and the amount of rationalizing going on by the Afghanistani people to see this as acceptable. We're now seeing from our government and the State Department in particular, and the cover of Time magazine, a real spin on this war, saying that suddenly it's about feminism and it's about protecting Afghani women. Does turning a blind eye to this culture of boy rape give the lie to that meme that this is about helping Afghani women?
I don't think there's any question that we should promote the rights of women in Afghanistan. No question about that. Women are terribly abused. That cover, that Time magazine cover, was shocking.
Yes.
We all knew things like this would go on, but we haven't been given photos of that you see in the grocery store checkout line.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the rape of little boys is, as Cardinale put it, a problem that is of at least equal value or equal concern. And I don't think the plight of women actually trumps this. We should be concerned about both.
absolutely. Although I'm afraid I don't really see where that's going to be happening. And, you know, you mentioned in your article how in many cases, fundamentalist imams exaggerate the biblical passage on menstruation, which is in the Old Testament, of saying that women are unclean, and that this is another rationalization for this widespread endemic boy rape.
As one woman walked up to Cardinale and asked her, I don't know whether he asked her specifically, but asked a member of her team, how do I get my wife to have a baby? This is a grown man.
And he didn't know?
He didn't know. And somebody in Cardinale's team explained it to him, and he was repulsed and said, women are unclean. Why on earth would I want to do that?
And again, we're not talking about boy prostitution here. We're talking about dating. We're talking about an exclusive sexual relationship.
We're talking about I don't know the proper noun, but the male equivalent of a mistress, a young mistress.
Well, it's very, very shocking, and I'm deeply grateful to you both for coming on the air and for writing this piece. Joel Brinkley is the Hearst Visiting Professional in Residence at Stanford University. He joined the Department of Communications there in 2006 after a 23-year career with the New York Times, and he was a Pulitzer Prize-winning foreign correspondent. Professor Brinkley, I'm so delighted that you joined us, and I thank you for your service to the children of Afghanistan and to the taxpayers of America for bringing this issue to light.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I want to know your thoughts on this. I know it was a bit heavy to play, which is normally a pretty funny show here when Steph's here, but I thought that her listeners deserve to know about this. So please feel free to call us at 1-800-STEPH-12 with your thoughts about Afghanistan and what exactly our troops are doing there. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang. Funny Stuff is coming back in a minute. We'll be right back.
Remember, you heard it on this channel first.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, covering for Steph and the Mooks this week. We just finished a very heavy and disturbing and dark and scary interview with Pulitzer Prize-winning author and professor Joel Brinkley from Stanford for his piece in last week's San Francisco Chronicle about the culture of Bachabaz, or the centuries-old tradition of grown men taking boys as lovers in Afghanistan, and how Afghanistan is considered the pedophilia capital of Asia. If you'd like to read the article, it's at sfgate.com. You can also find links to it on my Twitter page or my Facebook pages. And I highly recommend every American who pays taxes or plans to pay taxes to agree, because we're paying for it. We're paying for our troops to go there and give their blood to protect the Karzai government that allows this to happen. I know it's cultural. I know we American first worlders have no idea what we're talking about, but we're allowed to care. We have time for a couple of quick calls, I think. Nicholas in San Francisco?
If people want to watch the video on Frontline, they can go to Frontline, the PBS site, and there's a episode called Dancing Boys of Afghanistan, and it describes the behavior. I want to make two corrections. First of all, this isn't homosexuality. It's pedophilia.
No. Yep.
And I know that people have a problem trying to distinguish between the two because...
Well, the church does.
It's like scrambled eggs. It's hard to tell which is the white and which is the yolk. But it's...
No, it's not, actually. There's an age level of 18. It's not hard at all.
No,
I wish someone would teach the Pope.
It is a little hard because the behavior starts like when the kids are like 9 years old. They get sold into slavery. And then the men become young adults, and they get into the business. And so when the exploiter and then the exploitee become in a relationship when they're adults, it is kind of strange at that point, because it is homosexual behavior at that point, but I would equate it more to what's considered institutionalized homosexuality here in America with people in prison, men have sex. They're not considered homosexual. It's institutionalized homosexuality.
You're exactly right. John Dillinger himself slept with men in prison. It's sort of imposed on you. Nicholas, I thank you for the call, and again, that's Frontline, the Dancing Boys of Afghanistan. I'm John Fugel saying it's the Stephanie Miller Show. Funny Stuff is coming back right after this break, I promise. Well, I know that. It's yeah. Stephanie Miller Show. This is John Fugelsang filling in for Stephanie and the Mooks. We are joined now in studio by the founders of CitizenRadio.org, two of my favorite New York deviant minds, comedian Jamie Kilstein and his lovely bride, writer Allison Kilkenny. You know Allison if you ever go on to the Huffington Post. And if you haven't heard Jamie's stand-up yet, do yourself a favor and get over to YouTube and enrich your brain right now. I'm really happy to have you guys on the show and to have you be sort of my mooks I bring in for the experience. But because we have so many calls about Professor Brinkley's story on the Bach of Oz, I do want to take a few more calls. But Allison, you've seen the Frontline documentary about this.
I did. This is so weird. I just saw this documentary literally the other day, and it is heartbreaking. It's so well done.
I'm just going to interject about things that have nothing to do with the documentary because I haven't seen it, but it sounds horrible and scary.
Well, yeah, and it seems to me that, you know, we don't want Obama and Hillary Clinton to be any more beleaguered, but I think you think the tide of public opinion is against this war in Afghanistan now.
Oh, I thought you were going to say against child rape. Well, I think the public is against that.
I think we're pretty much firmly against child rape.
I thought we were taking a stand. I thought we were going to be like, no, we are against child rape, and then this show would be really famous and would get parades.
We are bravely coming out against child rape. Right. I do want to take a couple of calls about this. Jody in Los Angeles, are you there? Okay, we've lost Jody in Los Angeles. Jackie in Santa Cruz.
Hey, you're a great replacement. Listen,
thank you.
I was going to talk about...
My wife
about
said the same thing.
Yeah, I was going to talk about religious freedom, but maybe this is part of it. You know, any religion that allows this to happen, something really should be done about this. I mean, that interview with that gentleman was absolutely shocking and devastating. A country that can't protect its kids, something is really wrong. I do want to say something, though, about religious freedom. You know, another person's religion or their choice of gender, if they are adults, of course, adult to adult, has nothing to do with me. And I remember what Rodney King said so many years ago. Poor Rodney King, he was so mixed up, but he made a profound statement. Can't we all just get along? Let's try to do the right thing and act decently toward other people, and that certainly includes kids. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you so much for the call. I really do appreciate it. Deb in Chicago, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay, good. I agree that, you know, a nation needs to protect its children, and we're not doing a very good job of it right here. And the same thing is going on in the Catholic Church in the United States. There's very little that local law enforcement is doing about it.
I wouldn't say that. I think that law enforcement is doing whatever they can about it once they hear about it. The problem is that it's been kept from them, and the church from Cardinal Mahoney on up to Benedict have done their best to keep the local law enforcement from knowing.
Maybe.
We could always invade and occupy Rome. That's my idea.
Yeah. Well,
Citizen Radio, sorry.
When we start getting outraged by what's going on in Afghanistan, there needs to be a little bit more outrage about what's going on right here.
Well, absolutely, and I completely agree with you. But I do think it's worthy to talk about the outrage in Afghanistan, Jody, and I thank you for the call, just because people don't know about it. And it's not in the American media. It's only beginning to come out a bit through Frontline and through Professor Brinkley's article.
I also wanted to point out, if you do watch the documentary, the role of women is very important in all of this, because they were interviewing one of the fathers of one of the children that was being trained to be one of these boy dancers, and they said, what does your wife think of all of this? And he says, oh, my wife's opinion doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So if we could empower women, I bet you a lot of these mothers would say, I would like my son not to be used for gang rape.
Right. Can I say something to Jody's point? Yes. I agree with her, and I'm the first person to turn any argument against the church, whether we're talking about taxes. Like, I'll find a way to do it. So, like, I'm on board with you. But I think that this is kind of a problem when it comes to, there's never any gray area. It's always like you're Republican or you're Democrat or you're for the war or you're against the war, or like if you're a Jet, you're a Jet. Like, mm-hmm. it's always very categorized. And I think that
they want us fighting.
Right. And so I think that, you know, like, I used to criticize, but before I knew a lot about politics, I used to criticize Islam in my act just as much as I would criticize Christianity. And suddenly, when I was watching the news here, In America, I would realize that the only other people that were criticizing Islam were these awful right-wing bigots that I hated, like mm-hmm. Glenn Beck and people like that. And I think that progressives need to be realistic. And like, you know, I mean, I'm all for the community center. I'm all for religious freedom. I'm all for all these things. But you can't, you know, if Islam does do something bad or if people in Afghanistan do something bad, we can't be like, no, that's okay, because I don't want to agree with Glenn Beck on that. You know
well,
what I mean?
Exactly, but it also draws the distinction between, you know, criticizing Catholicism or Islam and criticizing boy rape. And I want to take a call from Nisar in Granada Hills. Did I say your name right?
Thank you, sir. I really enjoy your show. It's very educational. Let me just really quick tell you that the main source of this problem is, of course, the economy. People can hardly afford to get married. Marriage means certain responsibilities, a home, a place, to have kids, have a job. Now, Afghanistan is a primitive society in terms of economy. But in Quran, and fourth, what they call it, surah. It's a surah about the woman. There is a verse together when it describes the punishment for a man and a woman involving in adultery. The woman, man is condemned to 100 stripes or whatever. But together with that word, it says, if the indecency happens between two of you, mm-hmm. then you must ask for forgiveness. God will forgive you. Now, that two of you is not clear. It doesn't say, but it's scholars agree that it's between men and men, or right. woman and woman. Now, if you look at it, the punishment is literally not described. It's like just ask for God's forgiveness.
Now, right. Whereas, I just want to interject, in the Bible, the punishment for men with men is stoning death. And there is no punishment or laws against women with women in the Bible, but please go on.
Yeah, there is no such a thing, in Quran. It's not stoning death even for a man and a woman. The stoning death was introduced later on. It was done by Prophet Muhammad, but it was never mentioned in the Quran, and that's the big issue. But men and men, in that particular verse, now, the impact of that ambiguous verse is that many people, including the religious teachers and scholars, believe that having sex with a boy for a while and after asking for forgiveness is okay.
Right.
You will be forgiven. So if you do a little bit research, this thing is so common between
yes.
those who are called Taliban or Alim, who are staying in masjid with the many student boys. They regularly do it, and they believe that based on that Quranic verse, they are okay.
You're exactly right, Nisar, and I thank you so much for the call. You know, it's not being anti-Islam to be anti-raping children.
Right.
And
right.
I just got an email from my website at johnfuglesang.com from Frankie Daly, who said, when I was 23, I worked at a restaurant in Berkeley owned by a Lebanese family. On a few occasions, I was propositioned for sexual favors by the owner. I said no thank you, and that was that. One of my coworkers was a 25-year-old gay man, and when they found out he was openly gay, he was fired. The reason was, we were told, he was a man who had sex with men, but I was considered a boy, and that was okay.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, first of all, I love that he just, like, what a great response. Someone's like, I want to have sex with you, and just being like, no thanks, and, like, he got away with that. That's awesome. but, I mean, that's a problem. Like, most religions, they have this creepy, repressed sexual.
The more conservative any religious person is, the more creepy, repressed sexual they are.
Yeah.
I'll say that's definite. You know, in any religion, the more conservative you are, and this is across the boards with Islam and Judaism and Christianity, the more conservative you are, the more sexual hang-ups, and the more you
right.
are inclined to put down women.
Yeah.
And we all know that you're born gay or straight. They truly believe that it's, you know, an environmental thing. But yeah, if you're born that way, as people are, then you're just either suppressing it
yeah.
or you leave that religion and you embrace who you
right,
actually
but we don't
are.
We don't all believe that in America. We you know, as Hal Sparks likes to say all the time, we believe that you're gay is a choice, but being fat is genetic.
Right. Yeah, I have a sort of new theory that I think that any conservative, before you go to office, you should be required to have sex with someone of your own gender, just to make sure you don't like it before you start passing all this homophobic legislation.
That hasn't stopped quite a few of them, actually.
That's true. I know. I know.
And if you don't believe me, I can have a Republican senator play lookout in a men's room stall.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's true. And, you know, the Vatican and Pope Benedict, who is not as right-wing as a lot of right-wingers would like him to be. I want to give the guy credit for some positive things he's done. But the biggest, most offensive thing he's done has been their take on the pedophilia scandal in the Catholic Church was that it's not pedophilia. It's gay priests.
Right.
Now, folks, gay priests are in the church, but they tend to have boyfriends. The overwhelming majority of research, and again, it speaks to the essence of the conflict here, everyone who's ever done studies on pedophilia, the overwhelming majority of pedophiles are heterosexual, identified men.
Absolutely. That has been the number one issue that has bothered me about this whole debate, that people, even progressives, I hear conflating the two, that, you know, homosexuals are pedophiles and vice versa.
Yeah.
They are separate things.
Yes, adult gay men in a consensual adult relationship is fine, and there's nothing wrong with it. Being opposed to child rape doesn't mean you're opposed to Islam. And if you're asking me, a smart U.S. State Department would try to use this as a way of demonizing the Taliban and bringing moderate and liberal Islam into greater eminence in the worldview.
Right.
A smart State Department could spin this to their advantage and really try to marginalize the right-wing fundamentalist Islam even more.
As good of an idea as that is, anytime you say a smart State Department, I just check out. I'm like, oh, that's cute, John. That's so sweet of you.
Well, I don't know, because Hillary Clinton actually has really, you know, done a pretty effective job of reinventing herself after the campaign ended.
No, you know what? I totally agree with you. And this is just like a classic example of how bad we are botching things. When you have this kind of child rape going on in Afghanistan, in theory, it should be pretty easy to get moderate support. America is against child rape. That's what we should just name the occupation now.
Right, I'm sure Hillary Clinton knows this. I mean, Professor Brinkley said he didn't know if she knows it, but, you know, I'm a clown and I know it. So
right.
If she doesn't know it, we're in pretty bad shape. But I can understand why the administration wouldn't want this information to be too widespread, because they're already losing massive support for this occupation.
Right. Well, what I was going to say is that should just be a way, you know, I mean, the problem is, even if we do come out against that, if we are still blowing up schools, if we are still killing civilians, if we are still doing all these things, then moderates are not going to take our side. So why not stop that? Why not start empowering women? Why not start building schools and rebuilding everything we've broke in these countries try to get support?
And in fairness, we are. I mean, we're building a lot more schools in Afghanistan and Iraq than we're building in the States right now.
Sure, no, but sure. It doesn't matter if you stop the child from getting raped if you then blow up his village. I know what you're saying, Jamie. Yeah, it's just a matter of numbers.
Yeah.
Well, exactly, and this is the most hilarious thing, and I've been talking about this with our callers this week. We all have that one cousin. Everyone has the one racist cousin, right? We all got the one cousin who sends you the email that Obama's a Muslim. He's a Muslim, and he went to a bad Christian church for 20 years, and he's a Muslim. And, you know, the next time you hear someone say that they're a Muslim, that Obama is Muslim, you know, point out, this is the guy who's been launching drone bombs that have killed civilians. This is, you know, and it's, you know, loving Obama and all that, but the guy has been waging a war against Islamofascism, and he's, you know, while he won a lot of allies in Muslim for that beautiful speech in Cairo last year, which barely got any coverage in the States. I was in London when he gave that speech, and it was the biggest thing that hit Europe. But, you know, there's a lot of Muslims who are furious at this guy because he's our leader and he's waging war on these guys.
Yeah, he's a really bad Muslim.
He's a terrible Muslim. He ate salami with Bloomberg in New York.
Right. I believe he's a Muslim, but just an awful one. Just a very poor one. Yeah, man, I mean, we just need to, if we stop these wars, if we stop these illegal occupations, and then do come out against issues like this, I think we would just be taken more seriously.
Sure.
And I think that when you hear stories like that, it proves that, you know, there are things that need to be fixed in Afghanistan. But like Allison said, it's not one of those things where you can blow up a kid's house and kill his family, and then he's like, why'd you do that? And it's like, hey, look who saved you from rape. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
We need to be attacking these things on all fronts.
And, you know, in fairness, we have our own problems with Islam right now, because the eyes of the world are on a church that contains 38 douchebag illiterates in Florida who want to burn the Quran to show what good Christians they are.
Sure, I feel as though that story is a little bit of a red herring for reasons that we already discussed. You know, like, you know what's stoking anti-American sentiment? Probably occupying bombing several countries.
Exactly. If you're really afraid of our a bunch of Korans in being burned in Florida, endangering our troops' lives, you know what's endangering their lives? Sending them to Afghanistan.
Yeah, and I mean, Phelps' church has been burning Korans for a while now, and we never heard anything about that. But now the media is really fixated on this story. So.
Well, I mean, I want to say something about that, which is I'm a little... You know, I mean, I'm glad they're doing any angle to stop this Koran burning. I really am. But when you watch the news and the biggest thing they're focusing on is how it's endangering our troops' lives, mm-hmm. and it's like, it is, I agree, but how about it's also racist? How about it's also unconstitutional? How about, you know...
Well, it's not unconstitutional, it's completely legal.
Oh, it is constitutional,
Every bit as much as burning flags. It's like, you
right.
know, we
right.
have freedom means you have to tolerate things you hate, like other religions, flag burning, and Jonas
right.
Brothers. It happens.
Right, I'm actually burning a flag right now as we're speaking. I hope that's cool. But what I was going to say is I feel like, you know, watching some of these conservatives come out against it only because it endangers the troops, and it's like, be braver than that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why something's only bad once it endangers the troops. Like, that's how I want to start fixing all the problems. Like, I think we should raise taxes on the rich, and if people say no, I'm going to be like, you are putting the troops' lives in danger.
Yeah, you know, and I my brother's a psychotherapist. I think I'm going to call him in the next hour and ask him to give me a Paul, if you're listening, I'm going to call my brother, the psychotherapist, and ask him to give me a diagnosis on why these people, why this Terry Jones left Monty Python to run this church, and why he's actually going to be burning these Korans,
right.
the pathology behind it. We got to go to break in a second, but we'll be right back with Jamie Kilstein, Allison Kilkenny, and your calls about the Ground Zero Mosque, the Bahavaz, Barbara Boxer's pot-addled assistant, and anything else on your mind. I'm John Fugelsang, 1-800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Experience.
Holy cow! You just blew my mind!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
I love Stephanie Miller, too. More than I love Joan Jett, even. That's an awful lot. It's John Fugelsang filling in on the Stephanie Miller Experience. I am joined in the New York studios by my guest mooks for the afternoon, or for the morning, Jamie Kilstein and Allison Kilkenny. You can hear their show on WeAreCitizenRadio.com. Jamie's one of my favorite political comics in New York, and Allison is, redefined the Huffington Post as we know it. I really do love your stuff, and you manage to just be so prolific, Allison, and your outrage is so pointed and so focused, and you bring so much wit to everything you write about.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Now, tell the folks who don't know a little bit about what Citizen Radio is.
Sure.
Well, we try to really break down the news for people who perhaps aren't so inherently political. Maybe they're new to the political world.
Or just disenfranchised.
Disenfranchised, yeah. Younger people. Although we get a lot of mail from older people, too. The old hippies who enjoy our show as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty much like Democracy Now, but we're filthy.
Yeah.
You don't know any Goodman that well, then.
No. Well, I mean, what we try to do, like, here's a really cool way to describe it. So we've started to do a live show at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York, and the first show we did, we had Jeremy Scahill and Matt Taibbi. They were two journalists.
Jeremy Scahill, love Matt Taibbi.
Both of them. It was the first time they ever met. It was the first time they've been on panel together, and we actually have the footage on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/citizenradio, and then we had Janine Garofalo, and the theater was completely sold out. It was our first live show. We were totally nervous. My dad came, which was another layer of terrifying, which, John, as a comic, you know, anytime you see someone in the audience who doesn't like you, you automatically...
Daddy?
Yeah, totally.
My mom and dad came and saw me when I was playing with Daryl Hammond in Tampa after 9/11.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
And Daryl wanted me to go out before... I was middling, and Daryl wanted me to go out there and be as anti-Bush as possible. He wanted me to go out there and be Lenny Bruce so he could come out after my 45 minutes and win the crowd back with the impression. And I was naive enough to think this is a good thing, and my parents came and saw me practically have glassware thrown at me on stage.
Wow. Yeah, I've been there, buddy.
That said, I was right about everything.
Yeah, right.
But go on.
So here's what was so great about it, is half of the theater were these kind of hipster comedy kids mm-hmm. who probably didn't know who Matt and Jeremy were. The other half of the theater, Amy Goodman was actually in attendance, the Democracy Now! Crew, a lot of Bill Moyer staff was there. And what was so neat about the show is when Allison and I were telling our filthy jokes, Amy and all of them were laughing. And then when Jeremy was giving this really prolific rant about Afghanistan, this comedy theater was silent and was captivated. And that's kind of what we try to do.
We like the collision of the two worlds, the comedy world meaning the political world.
Well, that's why I love coming on the Stephanie Miller Show and dragging it down to my own guttural level, because this, for me, is one of the best places anywhere in American media where you can have your comedy. But this show is able to go from funny to serious on a dime.
Right.
And that's why I want to talk about Snooki. If they can find Snooki $500 for being annoying in public, can't they find MTV $500 million for dancing on Rock's grave?
Oh, my God. Really? I literally know nothing about the reality television
well,
world.
Well, here's the great thing about
Snooki. Yeah, those words meant nothing.
Like, she got fined $500?
The guy who won the presidential election has no idea who she is.
Okay.
The guy who lost tweets with her.
No.
So we can all feel good about voting for Obama, folks.
Right.
We have to go to break in just a minute, but we will be back. And at the top of the hour, we will have Counterpunch's Mike Whitney talking about the GOP's obstructionary plan for this fall's election. And several more guests in the next hour, including my brother, who will psychoanalyze from a Freudian perspective. The Koran Burners will be back with Jamie and Allison of Citizen Radio right after this.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you live from Steph East in New York City. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph and the Mooks all week long. We are delighted to take your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. We've brought you tragedy, we've brought you comedy, we've brought you Jamie Kilstein and Allison Kilkenny of Citizen Radio. And now we're joined by one of my favorite comedians and a really terrific guy. You would know this man as an actor from the films Funny People, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, or Curb Your Enthusiasm. He works with Jimmy Fallon all the time. It's Wayne Fetterman, kids.
Nice to be here. Yay. Hey. Delightful offices.
Thank you. I'm glad you like it. We shoot snuff films here at night. I do have to give, very quickly, a very brief message from the American Federation of State and County Municipal Employees. You'll like this, Wayne. A message from AFSCME. We know all too well what happens when Republicans run the show. Apologies and favors for big oil and Wall Street, schemes to privatize Social Security, and hundreds of thousands more layoffs for our teachers, nurses, and firefighters. As we get close to November, remember, history only repeats itself if you let it. So saith AFSCME. And I want to talk to you, Wayne, because you're not, I wouldn't call you a conservative.
Lock the doors.
But I wouldn't call you a conservative, but I would call you more conservative than what passes for liberal.
Right. Well, the weird thing is I consider myself a free thinker, so one of my peeves is I don't like either one of these parties.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I guess, kind of the George Carlin, like, when you get a lot of people in the room and they put on the hat, it just gets weird for me. So I like to just have my own views on a number of things. I would be, like, super liberal, like,
right,
on gay marriage.
Right,
like,
on.
For
exactly.
One example is that, but and legalization of drugs. But other things,
right on. Well,
I would be considered very conservative.
Barbara Boxer's aides would agree with you on that one, too.
Really?
But before we, I want to get your take on our next guest, because I'm very happy to have this guy on the phone. Mike Whitney is a terrific writer. I read his stuff on Counterpunch all the time, and he had a terrific piece last week called The GOP's Midterm Strategy, Make Sure Obama Fails. Mike Whitney joins us on the phone from the West Coast. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, thank you, John, for having me on.
Of course. It's dynamite to have you. And I wanted to ask, how do you feel about the roaring back into campaign mode Obama we've seen in the last 2 days?
I was frankly stunned. I listened to that speech very carefully yesterday, and they've completely changed direction from recovery summer to let's prove that we're not them. And you know, that speech yesterday was very successful in pointing out the shortcomings of the GOP, and if they're swept into office, as many people expect now, there's no new ideas. The campaign is the same, you know, war and tax cuts. That's it.
Yeah, and John Boehner shouldn't wear orange after Labor Day. Now, you point out in your piece on Counterpunch that the CBO, their report last week essentially said that the stimulus, for all the criticism we've heard against it, and for all the reality, it didn't keep unemployment from going up above 9%, but it did avert another Great Depression.
Well, I mean, who do we blame for this? I mean, do we blame the Republicans? Obviously have a much more successful communication strategy because 50% of the people believe that the stimulus failed. And now we have people on both sides of the aisle, professional economists, who are saying, no, it didn't fail. It did exactly what it was designed to do. And now we have the nonpartisan CBO coming out and saying that it lowered unemployment by 1.5%, it provided jobs for about 2.5 to 3 million people, and it increased GDP by roughly 3%. So by all standards, by all measurements, you know, the thing succeeded. But
isn't it fair to say that
Obama isn't getting his message out?
Well, but isn't it fair to say the GOP has always been better at getting their message out? I mean, the status quo usually does better at you know, getting people to go along with it, which is why any kind of evolution or progress takes a long time.
Well, you know, I agree with you in part, but it shouldn't be hard to point out that the same ideas that prevailed during the Bush administration, that's their platform. That hasn't changed. So, I mean, all we need to do to pin the tail on them is just to point out that there are no new ideas. What was Boehner talking about this week? He was saying, well, the way out of recession is to cut government spending. Well,
right.
You know, I mean, you have the
from
head,
the Pentagon.
No, anything except that non-security and non-defense. But so all the government programs that right now we know that food stamps have gone up 10% in the last year. There's 41 million Americans living on food stamps, so that would be subject to the cuts by John Boehner.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly,
so,
right. Then talk to anyone going to, you know, State University in California about about how good the budget cuts are helping them. And you point
out
in your piece that under President Bush, we nearly doubled the national debt from $5.4 trillion to $10.5 trillion.
Exactly.
So it was where's the conservative part come in?
You know, the Bush tax cuts and the increase in military spending during the Bush administration, which was about $700 billion, plus, if you add that to the huge housing bubble, was the largest increase in stimulus in the country's history. But, you know, look what the results were. I mean, we had absolutely stagnant, there was no job growth at all, stagnant wages, and it led to a situation where we had the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression. So that didn't work too well.
Well, now the argument you're going to get, Mike, is that Obama's spent even more and put us even more in debt, and that the stimulus, you know, even worsened the debt problem. So who are you, liberal freedom hater, to go blaming George Bush for this $1 trillion debt and Ronald Reagan for this $1 trillion debt when Obama's adding to it himself?
But this is where it really gets confusing because, yes, the Republicans have the better, buzzwords. They say that there's no way to solve a debt problem by increasing more debt, okay? But that's not the way the economy works, okay? When you increase the budget, ever since the Great Depression, we've learned how to use our budget deficits effectively, so it decreases demand, it increases, consumer spending, it increases employment, it narrows the GDP or the output gap, and when you increase all of those things, including GDP, then government revenues go up, and so the deficits become lower. And if we need an example of that, just look at Europe. I mean, wherever you go, Ireland, Greece, Lithuania, Latvia, all these places where they've tried these austerity measures, what's happened? The budget deficits have widened, not lowered. So I think we're just, this is just bad economics.
So, Mike, before I say goodbye, I just want to ask you, what is the number one argument you would have people give to their conservative friends and loved ones who say the stimulus didn't work?
Well, they have to be objective enough to, I don't know. I'm not a communication strategist. You know, I'm not a PR guy. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's that hard for me to understand or for people to look at a nonpartisan report like the CBO and just say, hey, look, it worked. Unemployment went down. You know, there were more jobs. The growth increased. You know, these things are pretty simple for people to understand. But as long as that message doesn't get out, you know, Obama's going to be on the defensive. So, you know, it's really kind of a sad situation. They just need someone better in their PR department.
Do you think we'll be seeing more of the campaign fighting Obama in the coming months?
He's going to have to do something because there's nothing he can do. There's no economic lever he can pull fast enough to increase employment. So he has to change his public relations strategy. And I think yesterday was really a good choice for him to go on the aggressive or go on the attack, because Boehner has already, you know, Boehner would be the Speaker of the House. And so if he's making the case, if he's making the case for cutting government spending right now in the heart of a recession, that should be easy to attack, because that's going to lead right back to a deeper recession or potentially a depression.
Right on. Mike Whitney writes for Counterpunch. His piece from last week was the GOP's midterm strategy, make sure Obama fails. Check this guy's stuff out. He's brilliant. And Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
So, you know, I want to ask, Wayne, here's my whole thing. If you spend money, and Allison and Jamie, feel free to jump in. If you spend money like Lindsay Lohan or first day off the plane in Amsterdam, do you still get to call yourself conservative? Mm. Like, do you consider the current Republican Party to be conservative?
Well, it's, I think they're trying to be a more of a smaller government party, but obviously their track record over the last 8 years was abysmal, so we'll see.
I mean, Reagan grew the government by 61,000 jobs, but he did it by making the Department of Veterans Affairs, which most of us would agree is a good thing for a socialist.
Well, yeah, but my point, well, listening to, was his name Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah, why is, like, economists like Paul Krugman saying the stimulus wasn't big enough?
Right.
And that it didn't work, if he's so sure that it did work?
Well, he was saying that in the beginning.
I feel like there's a mixed message going on here.
Well, no, I mean, I actually agree with Krugman. I would have liked to have seen the bailouts be smaller,
right.
And I would have liked to have seen the stimulus be even bigger.
Yeah,
I mean, the stimulus did, it not just created jobs, it didn't create, it did not create the amount of jobs that the White House told us it would, but it's saved untold thousands.
And that's actually what Krugman's saying. He's saying it somewhat worked, but what he recommended was that it would be twice as big.
Right. Now, but there was also part of that stimulus was tax cuts as well.
Mm-hmm,
so doesn't that undercut any kind of lower taxes doesn't stimulate the economy?
Well, except
argument?
That Obama's plan this week for tax cuts to businesses was done as an incentive so they would hire more. So in many ways, they're viewing the tax cuts for businesses as a jobs program.
Right,
just
I
as
understand.
An incentive, not that in itself that would work, that would then cause them to hire, which is also part of
Well, we got to go to break right now, but I promise we'll come back with more of this and more fart jokes. But I want to thank Jamie and Allison. WeareCitizenRadio.com. Check them out, two of my favorite minds in the East Coast. And I hope you guys will come join us again.
For sure. Yes, absolutely.
Stephanie Miller Show. I'll be back with Wayne Fetterman right after this.
And we'll be right back.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Won't you take me to Funky Town? No, it's no place for you. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph and the Mooks. I'm joined here in studio in New York City by the brilliant Mr. Wayne Fetterman.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Why is it in studio as opposed to in the studio? Why does everyone refuse to use that qualifier?
Because I think the is the most overrated article in the English language. Can't stand
so you
the.
Get in elevator,
I think
you get
we don't,
in car.
There's not enough ands, we need more. Yes, I get in elevator, I get in car.
Let's have drink.
My dad used to add the. You know, I heard you guys are going to go see the Star Wars. You
no,
watching the Seinfeld?
But it's not that. It's a studio.
It is. We are in the studio.
Thank you.
Yes. So there. But I'm pretentious, so that's how I talk. I'm very pleased, Wayne, to welcome this next guest. Richard R.J. Esco is a terrific writer. He's a consultant and a senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future. And last week he published a piece on Labor Day irony, how the people who want to cut Social Security all have great retirement plans. We are very pleased to welcome Mr. Esco to the Stephanie Miller Show. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here from the California.
Welcome to show. So, you know, Alan Simpson really drew a lot of public attention last week to the Social Security Commission when he said that it's a big beast with 310, it's a milk cow with 310 million tits. He was incorrect because the right word is teat. So it's the first time a teat was called a tit by a boob. But I think he did us a service by drawing a lot of attention to this panel because a lot of guys here are saying we need to cut Social Security in order to save it.
Right. The simple fact is that's absolutely not necessary. When you look at the funding of all government programs, there's virtually none that's in as good shape as Social Security is, and with a very minor tweak, like lifting the cap on the payroll tax, Social Security can essentially go on doing what it's been doing so well forever, and even if you didn't make any changes, it would still be fine for the next 27 years. So it's an odd obsession for these guys to have, but then I guess a guy who talks about 310 million tits may have odd obsessions. I don't know.
but that's not what I'm hearing. Everywhere I turn in the liberal media, Richard, I'm hearing Social Security's bankrupt. It's a bankrupt system. It's a failed system. Is this just a hype that I'm hearing from people who want to cut it?
Yes, absolutely. Look, there's a long tradition of wanting to go after Social Security for a variety of reasons, including, you know, impressing the bond markets with the discipline of our government, although the bond markets love our government right now, so I don't know what they're talking about. I think people like Alan Simpson and a number of others on the commission also have just a genuine hostility to the idea of people receiving benefits that they've paid for all their lives. And so, you know, I think it's a variety of things.
And that's why it's kind of strange to me, because Alan Simpson is a guy who has many admirable qualities, but has spent most of his life on the public teat. His father was a senator. He receives a very, very hefty congressional pension for his years in the Senate. So, you know, where do these guys get off on wanting to cut a program that people are actually paying into rather than just having a handout given them?
Well, you know, that's why I wrote about the members of the commission and their own very generous retirement plans, most of which have been either directly or indirectly funded by the U.S. taxpayer, the same taxpayers who funded their own Social Security program.
Like who? Let's name names.
Who on the commission?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of them. Simpson, look, Alan Simpson not only is going to get a nice pension as a long-term member of Congress in the Senate, but unlike a number of the rest of us, he doesn't have to never had to worry about his parents' financial security in their old age because his father had a government pension too. Erskine Bowles, Alice Rivlin, Representative Paul Ryan, Jed Hensarling, all these, not one of these folks has ever said, you know, I think it's so wrong to contribute to the deficit by taking this generous pension that I'm going to give it back, even though a lot of them could. And that includes, by the way, an erstwhile good guy like Andy Stern, former president of the SEIU, who retired at 59 with a $152,000 a year pension and is now saying that people who criticize what the commission is trying to do are assassins of change.
And we're paying for his pension.
Well, SEIU members in that case are paying for the pension, but that, you know, these are guys who are depending on Social Security to top off whatever they get at retirement. So
you mentioned Judd Gregg. He's another one in your piece. He wants to raise the retirement age to 70, and he's the son of a governor. He's another one like Simpson who's been, you know, living off the public teat his whole life.
Absolutely. And by the way, Simpson's father was also a governor as well as a senator. And Simpson's father went to Harvard. Simpson went to the University of Wyoming. But I'm sure that didn't create any self-esteem issues for Alan. Anyway, you were saying.
Well, I have a question for you.
Sure.
So, in a weird way, are you saying that anyone who works for government cannot recommend raising the retirement age for Social Security because that would be hypocritical?
Well, I guess I'm insinuating that, but I think more to the point. Look, I don't want this to be misunderstood, and I made the point in the piece itself. Government programs are good. I don't want the debate over this, including the fact that these people all get nice pensions, to be an argument against good pensions. People deserve good pensions after a lifetime of work and service, so I'm glad you brought it up. No, I'd rather see the opposite. I congratulate these guys for their public service. I thank them for it. I think they deserve a comfortable retirement as a result. I think every American deserves that after a lifetime of work and paying into the system. And rather than cutting benefits or forcing people who do manual labor to work until 70, I'd like to see everybody have the same kind of retirement security that these people have.
Right. And let me ask you one more question. What do you think, scale of 1 to 10, 10 being certainty, that the retirement age of Social Security is going to go up with this commission report?
Well, I think it's up in the air. I'm just about to publish a piece in the next hour or so. I think they're feeling the heat on that one. I think it's still possible, but I think they're going to try some other fast moves, including maybe beefing up benefits for low-income recipients and cutting them for everybody else, or some combination of that with raising the retirement age another year. And you know, they're trying. Look, what they're trying to do is, for predetermined reasons that I think most of us don't believe or agree with, they want to cut this program. And so now what they're trying to do is they're fishing around, trying to find a way to do that doesn't create a political explosion.
Thank you. Richard R.J. Esko, I'm sorry we're out of time, but he's a consultant and a writer and a senior fellow for the Campaign for America's Future and a guest on the Young Turks, and it's great having you on the Stephanie Miller Show. Thank you
and
so much.
Come sign our petition at ourfuture.org if you want to save Social Security.
Please do. We'll be right back after this.
Stephanie Miller.
What are you thinking in that sick mind of yours?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show, and I'm thinking quite a bit. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph and the Mooks all this week. We are taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm joined in studio by Mr. Wayne Fetterman in the studio
Well. Thank you.
And you know Wayne from Curb Your Enthusiasm and Knocked Up, and I loved you in Funny People backstage at the Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa.
Here's the weird thing is they didn't film that at the Comedy Magic Club.
That's right.
They built a set on the lot of Sony. I was like, you know, there's a club.
Leno plays there every week. You can just drive down the street.
8 miles down the street, that's this.
Well, and now those guys are running our federal budget. I'm very happy to welcome on the phone one of my favorite bloggers and a mainstay. Stay on the Twitter. Gotta laugh. Laffy, are you there?
Hey, you hunka burning tweets, you.
That's
how
indeed.
Are
that's indeed what my mom calls me. I'm great. I'm terrific. How are you doing?
I'm good. Hey, listen, John Boehner just called, and he and Sarah Palin are hosting a tax burning.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm giving Sarah Palin a little bit of props today. You know, guardedly, but because she is the only major Republican figure to come out so far against this Koran burning in Gainesville, Florida.
I give her half credit because she compared it to building the community center on, quote, ground zero, which, you know, isn't.
I agree with you. You're right. That's why I give her guarded credit for it.
Guarded credit is good.
But for her, I feel like that's a major step. Am I wrong?
For her, it's huge. For her,
to spell that is really huge.
I'm always happy when someone who doesn't believe in evolution chooses to evolve, and this is a little bit, so I'll take what I can get.
The theory of devolution, I think, is more her style.
Well, what I want to ask you, Laffy, is, you know, the Koran burning has really become the biggest story of the week. It's burning up everything. And, you know, a lot of people on the left and right are scoffing, saying this isn't real news, it isn't real news. But I sure do think it is real news. And I think that, you know, America's level of religious tolerance towards Islam at this point in our history is going to be in the history books. What are your readers saying to you?
They're mixed. I mean, to me, it is real news because it's gone international. When something goes international, it can't help but be real news. But I have half the readers are saying, don't give it any coverage. Ignore and it'll go away. But I don't think you can ignore something when across the world people are burning flags. You know, that just doesn't work for me.
Very true. Now, because you do the blunt, right? Can you explain to me what the blunt is? Because I thought it was had something to do with Barbara Boxer's assistants.
It's like being in studio. It's the blunt. It's actually just blunt. So you can drop the dot.
Okay.
And blunt is what I call a series of webisodes that I do where people, anybody, can send me 30-second or shorter little videos that they make of themselves talking to the camera about anything they want. Anybody can do it. And I just got a DM, a direct message from somebody on Twitter saying, hey, I'm all worked up about something. Can I do a blunt for you? And I do sometimes thematic ones. And what I do is I take a lot of short little, you know, snippets that people send me, and I string them together and put them together in sort of a daily show style. You know, I enhance them with little funny things and little sound bites.
Yeah, it's cute. Is there like a Twitter? It's like a video Twitter is what you're doing.
Exactly. That is exactly what the concept was when I thought of it. And I thought of it because I was screaming at the TV set, and I needed an outlet. And I thought, well, if I'm doing this, then I'm just guessing a whole lot of people are doing what I'm doing, and they need some place to put their anger, or they're happy. They could be very excited about something, you know?
So well, it allows citizens to go ahead and be pundits. Like, right, it allows ordinary slobs like me and Wayne to be, you know, pundits on TV and not let Ann Coulter do all the talking for us.
There you go. It's sort of like letters to the editor. You know how you're just venting? Only this lets you do it and put a face to it. And, you know, people don't have to give their real names. People often give their screen names or anything they want. Some people obscure their faces. Some people use, you know, a puppet or something else because they're afraid to show their faces, but they still want their voices heard.
So and where can people do that? Where can... So if I want to go onto your site and rant and be part of one of these videos, where do I go?
As a puppet.
As a puppet only.
You can be the puppet. You can be my puppet, John.
Oh.
You send to blunt@thepoliticalcarnival.net.
Fantastic. Now, what's going to happen to these Democrats in November? Is it as bad as the media is telling us it's going to be for them, or are they going to turn it around a bit?
I'm terrible at speculation, but I can only tell you what I've been hearing, and I've been hearing it's not as bad as everybody says. That, you know, as usual, the media is pushing one meme, and we're sort of hearing stories, internal polls saying something completely different, or at least, you know, not as bad. Yes, we're going to lose people. Isn't that inevitable? In a year where we just had somebody win, a Democrat win the presidency, so obviously we're going to lose people. But I don't know if it's going to be the wipeout everybody says it is.
What do you think, Wayne? Are the Democrats in bad shape?
I think the Democrats are in bad shape.
Yeah.
And but there's a lot of things running against them. And what we were talking about earlier was the main reason was the stimulus package. The main program is a mixed success.
And healthcare as well. I mean, arguably these two things succeeded. Like you're hearing people campaign against Obamacare, but they're not campaigning against we want to bring back pre-existing conditions.
No, it's weird. And everyone thought once healthcare passed. That there would be like a sea change and it would be like, oh, now we have this and there's going to be a lot of momentum. And I have to say, I'm fascinated by the politics behind healthcare because I can't believe the American people are like, no, we don't want this anymore.
Yeah.
We would rather not have. We're against healthcare. Just
I
a
totally
weird
agree
position
that,
to
way,
be
but
in.
I'm still more optimistic than you are.
Yeah, and what are you optimistic about in terms of that Obama can turn it around or in terms that this is the media creating a horse race for ratings?
A little of both. When he came out yesterday, I was live tweeting his speech, and people were really, really excited. I haven't seen that since the election. So I'm just kind of hoping he can swing it just enough where we're not going to be totally blown away. I do agree we're in bad shape. I'm not saying we're not. I'm just hoping that we're not as in quite as bad a shape as everybody is saying. And I do agree about this healthcare thing. What happened to that message?
Well,
what
you know,
happened to... Go ahead.
Well, I mean, as far as the healthcare message, I think that, you know, they passed it, but people still don't exactly know what it is. It's not the public option that Obama campaigned on, and it's something that is sort of reform, but it's more a series of improvements. Mm-hmm. Stephanie Miller's show has the most sexually attractive and brilliant audiences in the nation, and what a lot of them have been writing me talking about all week is that, you know, the big thing about this is it really is a horse race. Yeah, the Republicans are more organized. Yes, they're going to gain seats, but we've had a lot of callers point out, didn't losing the House in 1994 grant Bill Clinton his reelection? I mean, the last thing the Republicans want is to have to be in power because then they're going to be responsible for their lack of actions.
Right. I kind of agree with this. I'm going to jump in. But Bill Clinton also was able to pivot in a huge way and sign a huge welfare reform package and state in the House and the Senate that he is the era of big government is over.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that happening.
It's true.
Am I wrong?
You're right. You're very right. Laffey, who's the best GOP candidate? What's the ideal GOP ticket to go against Obama? If you were running them from Karl Rove's underground cave, who would you want to be on the ticket?
Not Sarah Palin.
I disagree. I think as a running mate, she could help them a lot.
As a running mate, but I don't know if she'd accept that position. I think that she'd want to be the one in charge. You know, I don't
until
think
she got bored. Yeah.
I have a question for Laffey.
Exactly.
I have a question for
you.
Well, go ahead, Wayne. Wayne has a question, Laffey.
Sorry about that. I have a question for you. When you scream in front of your television set, I'm very curious about it. What are you watching? And please don't tell me it's 2 1/2 Men.
No, I'm watching CNN.
You watch CNN, and that gives you the most angina?
Oh, well, I don't watch Fox, so I don't get angina from watching Fox because I don't turn it on. I cannot tolerate.
You can't tolerate.
The minute I see their faces, I scream. So I just, no, that's like on auto go. I was watching Weekend News. Gets me more than anything. Weekend News is pathetic. It's just, I was watching CNN the other day, and the news DJ was on, and he had a very serious political analyst on. And so it was the news DJ, and the political analysts were talking about a poll, the CNN poll, and they were saying how in deep doo-doo the Democrats are, and they were very serious and very confident about how deep the doo-doo was. They were so into doo-doo that they should have a game show called Doo-Doo for Dems. I mean,
did they really use the expression deep doo-doo?
Well, no.
Okay.
But it was close. And actually, one of them might have. I don't know. But all that went through my head when I was watching them. I had this little, you know, news crawl going along the bottom of my body saying, deep doo-doo, deep doo-doo, deep doo-doo. And then they got to a part of the poll that said that the numbers for the Tea Party were dropping. And all of a sudden, they were very hesitant, and they were saying, well, possibly, maybe, they may be losing support. It's just our opinion. And first of all, anchors shouldn't be giving opinions. Analysts should be giving opinions. And second of all, why did they suddenly become very not confident when they were talking about the Tea Party's numbers?
Right.
But when they talked about the Dems dropping, they were very – and then they left out one part of the poll, oddly, and that was the part – that the midterms will not be about sending Obama a message. There was no mention of that in their own CNN poll. All they could talk about was how Obama and the Democrats would lose. And it was the whole conversation seemed like it was designed to cast a lot of doubt about the Democrats during the election season. And then I turned off the TV.
Well, I got to say one thing in defense of CNN. Their on-camera department has employed more unemployed former Old Navy commercial actors than just about anybody else. And there's lots of people who were in an Old Navy commercial and were very cute and then couldn't find more work, and CNN gave them jobs being cute. Wolf Blitzer was one. Yeah. I mean, his performance police spot was one of the highlights of the 90s for me.
I loved his reversible keys.
Wayne, what do you think is the strongest possible GOP ticket for 2012?
I have no idea, but I'm going to say, I think it's going to be Romney.
Yeah.
And I don't
know
who is going to be with him. And I don't think it's going to be Palin.
I don't think it will be either, but I do. I think John Thune Palin would really be the strongest ticket they could have.
Right.
That, I think, would scare a lot of Democrats, because Romney is weak on so many fronts, not the least of which is that he's a closeted gay man, which he isn't, but I'm trying to starting that rumor, calling him catcher's mitt. And I'm just trying to, you know, make him deny it.
It might be Marco Rubio on the ticket with him.
It could be, but I think Marco's going to have his hands full. He's not going to want to quit the senator job that soon.
I don't know. There's a precedent in the White House right now.
That's very true. A first-term senator's doing it.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a curious thing.
You have to go way back in history to 2 years ago to find a precedent for this.
Well, I think Obama not being reelected is Glenn Beck's worst nightmare, to be honest.
I agree with you. It's terrible for Fox not to have Obama in the White House.
I mean, you know, imagine if Fox was the hate the government network for 8 years, then they were defend the White House network for 8 years, and now they're hate the White House network, and they don't want to switch back so soon.
It's a lot of whiplash.
You got to change the towels and everything. It's just a new stationery.
Very tricky.
So, Laffey, where can people read your stuff?
At thepoliticalcarnival.net.
Fantastic. It's always a pleasure. I'm very glad to have you on the show. Got a laugh on Twitter, and that's Laugh with 2 Fs. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And when we come back after the break, Wayne, I'm going to call my brother Paul Fugelsang, who is a psychotherapist in Florida, and ask him to give me a Freudian analysis of the Koran burning.
We're going to talk Florida.
You don't want to miss that. We're going to go there, folks. Stick around. 1-800-STEP-1-2. Stephanie Miller Show.
More fun than a barrel of monkeys. moron.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show, y'all. This is John Fugelsang filling in for Steph all week long. Along with joining me in the studio is Wayne Fetterman, comedian extraordinaire. And we've been talking all week about Terry Jones, who has left Monty Python to get a silly mustache and work with the Dove Outreach Center. They reach out by burning your religion's holy books.
And sponsored by the soap, right?
Sponsored by Dove Soap. Yeah, it's a dirty business, but someone's got to burn Korans. And so we were talking about the pathology behind this, and I thought, you know, my brother's in Florida, and he's a psychotherapist, and I wonder what would be a Freudian take on this. So Paul, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
I want to welcome everyone for the first time on the Stephanie Miller Show, my brother, the improbably licensed psychotherapist, Paul Fugelsang. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Paul, it's a pleasure to have you here, and you're much smarter about this stuff than I am. So can you give me some idea of what could be behind Pastor Terry Jones? Does Freud speak about this kind of behavior?
He does. He does. Freud had this thing he called the repetition compulsion. And in a nutshell, what he says is that we all have these wounds that we acquire early on in childhood. Some of those wounds are way more serious than others. And most of us end up transitioning into adulthood without being too hampered by these wounds. But for some of us, they fester and they can get really ugly.
Well, it's interesting because with the impression I get with this guy, I guess the clinical term I would use is douchebag. And he was running this church in Cologne, Germany, where apparently they were spiritually abusive, and they threw him out of his church. Now he's down with 38 members in his new little backwoods church in the great town of Gainesville. It seems like he seems going through a cycle, you call it repetition, of just being a douchebag to people under spiritual grounds.
Yeah, it is a cycle, and it does get really tricky. The good news is that we all have this thing inside of us, which is constantly striving for health and well-being. But the problem is that when these early childhood wounds that I mentioned go unattended, that part of us that wants to get better gets confused, and it starts acting out in all the wrong directions.
So is he seeking attention by burning Korans?
Well, it's probably more complex than that and a little more sad than that. This part that's striving for health, what it ends up doing is it starts recreating the feelings that were produced by the original wounding in an attempt to become healed or become whole again in that area. So
right.
The problem is that it's a really unconscious process, and what keeps happening is he keeps recreating the same painful experience over and over again.
So like his parents named him after a guy who dressed in drag and Monty Python or whatever happened to him as a child, and it's led to him, in this case, using Christianity as a cover for hostility.
Well, I want to be really careful because I know so little about this guy, and this is all just for fun. It's all just hypothetical. Let's say that his parents, he was looking to get from his parents what we all look for. He wanted love and approval and affection, but instead he just got a lot of condemnation and a lot of disapproval and a lot of criticism.
We assume.
Yeah.
We assume.
But that happened to me, and I'm not burning a Koran. That is totally my childhood.
So you probably did a much better job negotiating those things as you got older than this certain guy did, if this is the case. And it's really kind of sad when you think about it, because maybe he's trying to get better, and maybe he's doing that in this really unconscious way by recreating a really painful pattern. So he started getting all this crap from his parents, and now at this stage of his life, he's getting it from General Petraeus instead.
General Petraeus, stop nagging me!
So you're really blaming something that his parents did to him? It couldn't have happened in school. Could have happened.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, we're all a conglomeration of causes and conditions that got us to this place where we are in the present moment. It could have been a variety of things.
It could have been his peers. It could have been
his peer. Could have been a bad food experience.
Well, the problem is that we keep doing it over and over again.
Absolutely. Well, you're a lot more. I have to applaud you. I can't believe we're related because you're a lot more compassionate and understanding than I am on this.
Yeah, because douchebag is that's Jungian.
Douchebag
that's Jungian.
Is that's much
that's
more
not,
Jungian.
Yeah, that's
Wayne,
not Freud.
You're right. Yeah, I cut straight to it. I'm more of a young guy. Hey, can I ask you a weird therapy question, Paul? Is it true that a lot of therapists are now using Skype for their sessions with people? Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, it's happening more and more.
it's always preferred to do therapy in person, but more and more, because the internet has come along and technology has provided this great service for people, people who are geographically isolated or who just can't find the right therapist in their area can now find people located all around the country.
You know, that's interesting. That's kind of a throwback, because I remember my grandmother used to do therapy by telegraph.
Did she really?
Yeah, yeah, just dots and dashes.
Took forever, though, right?
It was pretty effective. It was pretty effective.
You never knew when it was ellipses trailing off or when it was just, you know... if she was telegraphing for help. Do you do clients with Skype? I just heard about this. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, I do.
Do.
I see clients on through the internet. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right on.
Have you ever done a phoner?
Yes, I've done that as well.
Oh, I've done phoners with therapists before.
You have?
Oh, in a crying, heaving, weeping ball on the floor. Yeah, yes, I have many. Back when I was in therapy, but I had a good therapist. I think she kept telling me she was.
Ah, so you can do it anyway. So it's the same, right?
Well, yeah, I guess it's kind of cool. Like if you can't find the right therapist, like therapy is like religion. You know, it's not necessarily good until you find the right one.
Who's not burning a Koran?
Exactly.
I got it. It's like religion.
Exactly. Well, Paul, where can if people want to learn more about you, where can they go?
PaulFugelsang.com.
The tough part about
What part of Florida are you from? Because I grew up in Florida. Here's the weird thing. I grew up in Florida. Now I live in New York, and I'm going to retire in Minsk. I'm doing the whole thing backwards.
Well, he's the opposite. Paul grew up in New York, and now he just moved to. Paul just moved to Florida last week, so you're a new arrival in the great state.
I am. St. Augustine.
Right on.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Okay, well, hey, Paul, I want to thank you for calling in, and thank you for your expertise. Maybe tomorrow I'll ask you to analyze Palin for me.
That sounds great and scary.
Right on. My brother, Paul Fugelsang, thank you so much for letting me pick your brain. He's a lot more compassionate to this.
I love that.
Mustache.
I like that you can actually call him your brother. That's my brother. That's literally my brother.
Hey, what's up, my brother? I like that my brother is a learned man who has more compassion for society's douchebags than me. Wayne, where can people see you? What's next for you?
Well, there's a documentary called I Am Comic that I'm in it's in theaters, and it's just going to be on Showtime, and I'm doing that. I'm touring with Jimmy Fallon, and obviously there's a website. It's a crazy name for it.
What is it?
Wayne Fetterman and then a .com.
I'll be all over it. It's a pleasure to have you here. You're
Thanks,
one
man.
Of my favorites. And I want to thank all of today's guests, including Jamie Kilstein, Allison Kilkenny, RJ Eskow, Got a Laugh, Wayne, of course, Mike Whitney, and, of course, Pulitzer Prize winner Joel Brinkley. Again, folks, you can go to my Twitter page or my Facebook to read his article about the Bakhabaz culture in Afghanistan. Tomorrow's my last day with you. You get Stephanie back next week, and we got a hilarious show tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am John Fugelsang, and I love Stephanie Miller audience more than just about anything. Have a great day, people. Go make the world better.